Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, Behavior of a Perfect Person, Text 24. Trishnaya Bhava Vahinaya Yogyai Kamar Apuryaya Karmani Karyamanoham Nana Yonishu Yojitaha. Trishnaya. Because of material desires.
Because of material desires.
Bhava Vahinaya. Under the sway of the material laws of nature.
Under the sway of the material laws of nature.
Yogai. As it is benefiting. Kamai. By material desires. Apuryaya. Without end. One after another. Karmani. Activities. Karyamana. Constantly being compelled to perform. Aham. I. Nana Yonishu. In various forms of life. Yojitaha. Engage in the struggle for existence. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Because of insatiable material desires, I was being carried away by the waves of material nature's laws. And thus I was engaging in different activities, struggling for existence in various forms of life. So who's talking here? A python's talking. A python is talking. What an advanced snake. Wow, my God. Only we could become so advanced as a snake. Anyone else talking besides the python? Sage, yes. It was like a python. And who is he talking to? Prahlad Maharaj, yes. And why is Prahlad Maharaj talking to him? He's looking for some snake found in the back, in the garden. Yes.
He's exhibiting how the saintly persons are behaving. And he was wondering why he's the way he was.
It had Prahlad Maharaj get there.
Oh, just wandering the universe.
Yeah, just wandering the universe. Happened to be wandering the universe and he happened to meet this person somewhere. What was the river that he was nearby?
It was
a nice river. Actually, it says it was a very bad river, but. What was the river he was near? Kaveri, yes, Kaveri. And what was the mountain? What was the mountain? What's that? No, no, it's a really simple name. This begins with a K, Kaya, I believe. No, Saya. Saya Mountain. Anyone's ever been to the Saya Mountain? It'd be very popular for people in Slovenia to go to the Saya Mountain. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Oh, purport. As long as the living entity wants to fulfill various types of material desire, he must continuously change from one body to another. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that a small piece of grass falls in a river and is tossed about with different types of wood and tree branches. The living entity floats in the ocean material existence and is dashed and tossed amidst material conditions. This is called struggle for existence. So, who's the piece of grass? Yes. And who's the leaves and branches? No. It's all the things that we meet up with, being tossed around by the material energy. It's everything we see out here. These are all the leaves, these are all the branches from the different trees. Material existence. This is called one kind of fruitive activity causes the living entity to take one form of body, and because of actions performed in that body, another body is created. One must therefore stop these material activities, and the chance to do so is given in the human form of life. Specifically, our energy to act should be engaged in the service of the Lord, for then materialistic activities will automatically stop. One must fulfill one's desires by surrendering unto the Supreme Lord, for he knows how to fulfill them. Even though one may have material desires, one should therefore engage in the devotional service to the Lord. That will purify one's struggle for existence. Akama sarvakama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena vijeta purusham param. Person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desires, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karma anavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttamam. One should render transcendental service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably, without desire for material profit or gain, through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11. Trishnaya bhava vahinya yogai kamar apuryaya karmani karma karyamanoham nana yonishi yojitaha. Because of insatiable material desires, I have been carried away by the waves of material nature's laws. And thus I was engaging in different activities, struggling for existence and various forms of life. Mam Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Viranta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Srinivari Paskyadhyade Sitarane. The saintly persons explaining how we got into that situation. And the amazing thing is that the saintly person is giving the same philosophy everyone else gives in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he must have heard from someone who heard the Bhagavatam. Or we could say there's one reality, and anyone who enters into that reality sees the same thing. And anyone who's not in that reality, they see something completely different. Therefore, there's a continuity in our philosophy throughout the Bhagavatam. It is not that one saintly person says, or at least one Vaishnava says, that you can do anything you want and you'll go back to Godhead. Another one says, you shouldn't do anything and still you'll go back to Godhead. Well, everyone says the same thing. According to our desires, we've taken this body. And as we follow our desires that are arising in this body, as we act in this body according to material desires, then we're creating our next body. And if we want to stop creating the next body, there is only one method of doing it. There's not many methods. The one method is we have to do things for Krishna. Otherwise, one will have to take another body. And there are three, as I always mention, there are three levels of doing things for Krishna. Generally speaking, if we accept one level, we think we're self-realized. We think it's too much. And we usually accept that one level for 5 or 10 minutes a day. And we think, wow, I'm really advanced. The first level is what? What is the first thing we have to accept? See, it takes a few times to repeat these things. What's that?
That Krishna is God.
Well, what does that mean, Krishna is God? What's the first part of Krishna as being God that we have to accept? No, what does that have to do with Krishna being God?
That everything is in His possession.
Yes, everything belongs to Krishna. Krishna is the proprietor. If we don't accept Krishna as the proprietor, we're going zero. We're going nowhere. Well, we are going somewhere, but it's not the place we should be going. The whole material existence is based upon the fact that we want to be the proprietor. Because someone thinks, well, I'm not a bad person. I just want to be a proprietor of a dog. Yes, no problem. You can be the proprietor of a dog. And in the future, the dog will be your proprietor when you become a dog. No problem. Or nowadays, they've taken up the idea, this is my wife, this is my husband, this is my family, this is my house, this is my country. This is all mine. And if someone says that, no, it actually belongs to Krishna, the people can become angry. Krishna is going to steal this from me? No way. So this is better known as illusion. And the material world exists in illusion. Or, as Krishna says, dhyayato vishyam pumsam sangas teshu pajayate. Sangas teshu Vijayate. Sangha sanjayate kama, kama krodha vijayate. So what people think is love, what people think is natural desire, or they call it inspiration. They call it your passion. Yes, it definitely is your passion. And it'll turn into your ignorance soon. And then from your ignorance, it'll turn into your delusion. And what is our delusion? We want to find out, are people deluded or not? Well, just look into the mirror and ask yourself, who am I? And if there's any thought that I am this body, of course, we don't even have to look into the mirror, we just have to think for a second. Do I identify myself with this body at all? Am I concerned with what's happening to my body at all? Do I become disturbed that something nice, so nice happens to the body? And do I become elated when something pleasurable happens to the body? And if we answer yes, then we're in delusion. And of course, we're looking around, everyone else is in delusion. We take comfort that, yes, I'm in delusion, so everything is going nicely because no one's going to criticize me for being in delusion because everyone else is in delusion. What is that? In the kingdom of the fools, it's folly to be wise. Do they have that here?
Yes.
What is it? In Slovenia, they have a saying like that?
Something.
In the kingdom of fools, it's folly to be wise. That someone stands out, they seem to be out of the crowd, and everyone says, look at him. You know, what's wrong with him? It's like I saw this little story that people are in the plantations in America. As you know, there used to be slavery. Of course, now there's still slavery. It's called you're a slave to your wages. They just made it a little bit more subtle. You're a slave. You have to do whatever the master asks you to do because he gives you a piece of paper. And you think, oh, thank you very much. You give me a piece of paper. It's so kind of you. Anything else I can do for another piece of paper? They print up the paper out of nothing. It's just a piece of paper. Convince everyone by propaganda that it has some value. Because if it gets cold and you have enough pieces of paper like that, you can burn them and maybe get warm for a couple of minutes. Other than that, there's no practical value. You'd have to have a lot of pieces of those papers to plaster your wall, cover your wall. In any case, so there is slavery in the southern part of America, and one man came to advise one of the plantation owners, saying that, "I heard you had some trouble dealing with your slaves." He said, "Yes, sometimes they escape, they're a little lazy. So what should I do?" So he said, "I got an idea." He said, "But you don't say anything. Don't contradict whatever I say." So they called a meeting with all the slaves in the plantation. And the plantation owner introduced this man. He said, "This is a very intelligent man. He's now he's in charge of my plantation. You do whatever he asks you to do." So the man said, "My dearest slaves, from this day on, you're all free." And the plantation owner was about to get very disturbed. And what do you mean they're all free? But he controlled himself for the first time in his life, probably. And he continued. He said, "You're all free, but being free man doesn't mean that you can do anything, because we have to follow certain things for the welfare of the other free men. For one thing, all you free men, you should not leave the plantation, because if you go to the other plantations, they'll capture you and you won't be free anymore. So you have to stay on this plantation in order to remain free. And of course, as free men, we have to decide how we're going to live together in freedom. So every man has the responsibility as a free man to contribute to all the other free men. So now all you free men, you have to work harder in order to support all the other free men. And of course, we have our plantation. This man from the plantation, he has his house and everything else, so he's also a free man." So time went on, and around a month came later, and they had their meetings every week, or every week or so. And one man stood up, and he said, "Sir, you said we're all free, but we're not free to go anywhere. We have the same job as we had before. Nothing changed so far. We're working harder than we did before. We get the same salary. And you say we're free." So the man said, "Well, don't contradict me. You know, you're all free. We're here to protect you. That's why we don't want you to leave the plantation. And we're dividing up whatever you make. You get what you need, because you're all free men." So all the other slaves, they said, "Yeah, we're free now. Why is this man causing a disturbance? This man who spoke out. So go back." So he went back. Sometime later came about, and again they had their meeting, and this man spoke out again. And the person who was controlling, more or less now in charge of the farm, said, "Don't worry. Our plantation owner has a cousin. He's going to come. And every year we're going to elect who's going to be in charge of the plantation. So if you don't like the way it's being run now, next year you'll have a chance to vote for this other man running the plantation. And he'll be doing hopefully a better job." So his cousin came from the plantation owner. They had another election. They decided to elect him. Then they had another meeting, and the same man who complained the first time stood up and said, "Sir, you say we're free, but we're not free to go anywhere. We're doing the same job. We're getting the same pay. And we're electing different people, but we're getting the same result. Anything. Nothing's changing." So the man in charge said, "This man is causing a disturbance. He must be punished." And all the other slaves are saying, yeah, he's disturbing. He's, you know, the free man, he's trying to cause a revolution, you know, trying to take away our freedom. So they whipped him in front of all the slaves, and all the slaves were cheering, yeah, hit him again. So that's the history of free men. People who think they're free, they're free to be slaves. That's what they've chosen. But because they're in delusion, and because they're deluded, they can easily be fooled into thinking that they're actually something, they're in another position than they're actually in. If you go in the street and you tell people your body's changing, you're not changing, and according to what you're doing right now, you're going to have to take another body shortly, and if you're doing sinful activities, you'll have to take the body of an animal, or lower than an animal, what will people tell you? They'll have you arrested. This person's crazy, he's disturbing me. He's telling me all kinds of nonsense. He's telling me my body's changing. He's insulting me. He's insulting my body. This is not what people want to hear. As a matter of fact, you won't find out about in this news, if you go to the newspapers, written by the learned journalists, telling us what's going on. If you go to the university and take a course in reality, will they actually tell you, in even the political course, you go to a big university, will they actually tell you at the university that you're a bunch of slaves and the whole history is one group of lords figuring out how to control and all the slaves and convince them that they're actually making progress, that they're actually becoming, that they become free, free to serve instead of serving 8 hours a day or 6 hours a day working the fields. Now you're free to work 14 hours a day. You, your wife, and children, you're all free to work 14 hours a day, get the same food, the same shelter, but you're in debt. They give you a little piece of metal called a smartphone for stupid people. You can't think anymore, you're so dull due to the intoxication and everything else you're doing. But you have a smartphone. So now you're dependent upon the smartphone, which is tracking your every moment and every thought practically. And you're free. You're free to serve the masters who gave you the smartphone. And has you working 14 hours a day for a piece of straw. Or a dead material body from 500 ground up dead cows. And you think you're enjoying. So people are free to be in delusion. And they're also free to become Krishna conscious if they want. But they have to accept to hear from someone in knowledge and then act upon it. That's all. That's all that's required. So who are the people in knowledge? We're supposed to be the people in knowledge. We're supposed to know that we're not this body, Krishna is God, we should serve Krishna, become his instrument. That's all we have to tell people. We don't have to tell them how to, you know, all the intricacies of how to have a happy home and garden. It's not necessary to get into all the people find out about these from other people, but they're not going to find out about the laws of karma. They're not going to find out how they've been fooled by modern society into thinking they're free when they're completely bound up by the lower modes of material nature and are destined to a very undesirable future. The only people who's going to be able to reveal that to them is us. Of course, it's in Prabhupada's books, and we try to distribute books. We even try to distribute the holy name sometimes. But unless they hear from a person, how will they understand what this is all about? Unless they can get into their time machine and go back to Satyayuga and meet Dhruva Maharaj doing his austerity. Hey, Dhruva Maharaj, I just got in my time machine. What are you doing? Well, this is my third month, I'm just eating leaves dropping from the trees. Would I try a leaf? This one is not so dry as the other one. I think you'll like it. People are not going to be able to get into their time machine and go back and meet Dhruva Maharaj. The only people they're going to meet are the people out in the street. Or maybe people will call them up on the telephone. That's the only opportunity they have between now and the next moment when they're going to drop into the lower species of life. So we think all this Bhagavatam is an old book and is meant for old people, and we're in a different age and people don't like it. They won't like what we tell them. Of course they may not like what they tell them. Matter of fact, we don't like what we're hearing either. But still, we have a little bit of intelligence. We can understand the necessity of hearing it. Otherwise, what is our mentality? What kind of feelings do we have if we look at people and say, "Oh, you're going to hell. I wish you well. I don't want to disturb you." Person's walking, he's blind, he's about to walk over a cliff. He say, "Hey!" And someone says, "Why are you disturbing that man? Why are you shouting so loud? Don't you have any manners? Hey, shut up!" And then the man turns around and says, "Hey, what are you bothering me for, kid? Shut up!" And then he keeps on walking. Ah! So we shouldn't be discouraged if we're saying something that people, not everyone's going to like. Of course, we should try to present Krishna consciousness in the most palatable way possible. But it's not that everyone's going to appreciate us. It's not that if you go to the kingdom of Ravana, you start distributing books in Lanka when he's the king, and someone stops and says, "Hey, kid, I think you're doing something illegal." "Oh, I'm sorry, you know. What's that book about anyhow, you know? Oh, it's all right. It's glorifying. It has Ravana in it. Ninth canto talks about Ravana." "Oh, really? Could I see?" "Yeah, Ravana, he's the king of Lanka. Hey, that's a pretty good book. Go on, kid." So if you're the kingdom of Ravana, you know, then you have to be intelligent in how you approach people, how you distribute this knowledge. But still, we shouldn't be discouraged, because it's our only hope also. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't come here to establish, you know, to create monks who live in a little cave somewhere. He came here to distribute Krishna consciousness. And even Lord Nityananda, he had a hard time sometimes trying to preach Krishna consciousness. Now that everyone said, "Oh, he's Lord Nityananda, he's God. Let's surrender to him, you know. Wow, can I get your autograph? Nityananda. Wow, this is going to be worth a lot, you know." No, he sometimes he'd knock on the door. People would answer and say, "Who are you guys? What are you doing here?" Him and Haridas Thakur. He said, "Well, here, Bolo Krishna, Bhaja Krishna, Karo Krishna, Shika. Chant Krishna's name, Bolo Krishna, worship Krishna, and follow Krishna's instructions." So do you think because he's Lord Nityananda, Haridas Namacharya, Haridas Thakur, everyone just welcomed him and gave him a limka, gave him some lemon juice? No, they shut the door and said, "Oh, these people are dacoits. They're just checking our house out, seeing if there's anything valuable, and later on they're going to come back and steal." So other people said, "Oh, these people are just, you know, they're useless mendicants, just going around begging to fill up their stomach." So even Lord Nityananda didn't get such a good reception. Neither Namacharya, Haridas Thakur. But still, they got some good reception. They sold some books. And ultimately, they even delivered Jagai Madai because of their determination. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was pleased by their activities. So similarly, if we want a better existence in this life and in the future, then we have to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's the only way we're going to get his mercy, his association. and the association ultimately of Krishna and his associates. Otherwise, there's no hope either for the people outside, nor there will be any hope for us either. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
I said in the commentary, it's one expression or part of the sentence, that even though one may have material desires, one should therefore engage in the devotional service of the Lord. That will purify one's struggle for existence. What is here? Can you elaborate a little more? That will purify one's struggle for existence.
That verse doesn't come immediately to my mind. Let's see. That living entities in the material world have fragmental parts. They are all eternal. But due to conditioned life, they are struggling hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So the living entity... What's that? Mamai vangso jiva loke jiva bhutak sanatanam manakshastran indriyani prakriti stani karshati. Living entities are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So when the mind's fixed on Krishna, then the struggle ends. The living entity no longer thinks he's struggling. We think we're struggling, because we're identifying with his body that's struggling. But when we identify ourselves with Krishna, who's not struggling, and we're in bliss, and we realize we're not this body, we're not the doer of the activities, then we don't have this experience of struggling anymore. The struggle ends.
So it's about perception.
Yeah, everything is just perception, consciousness. When our consciousness is in Krishna, then we have no more, then we realize who we are and what's going on, then there's no more problem. Because this material world is just another, is a dream of Mahavishnu. And we're actually just absorbed in his dream, that's all. When we wake up, then there's no more problems. At least we don't have a problem. This body doesn't have a problem either because it's dead. It doesn't really exist. Just some earth, water, fire, air, and ether manifests in a certain form, just constantly changing. The body has no problem because the body's not even conscious. But because we identify it with it, therefore, that's our problem. That's our only problem. Rather than with Krishna. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.